And we're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's a News Buzz edition of our program. We like to have quick conversations on Friday about some of the news that we didn't get to earlier in the week on our talk shows. Still to come, a story of alleged racial profiling this week in West Des Moines. Also, to finish off our program, Clear Lake's winter dance party. And we remember the man who saved the surf ballroom. But before that, this week, Linn County agreed to pay $285,000 to an Arizona man who was arrested, transported across the country, and jailed for 68 days for a crime he didn't commit. Joining us with a story, Ryan Foley, AP correspondent. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, Ben.
Take us back to the arrest. Tell us the story back to, I guess, January of 2017.
Yeah, the crime occurred in January of 2017. There was a violent home invasion in Cedar Rapids in which a 27-year-old man was beaten by two men who had barged into his apartment and robbed. And this was what you'd call sort of a honeypot scheme where a young woman had befriended this victim, gotten into his apartment, and then two of her acquaintances came in and robbed him. Before the police arrived, the suspects left the scene, and so that left it up to the victim to try to identify who was responsible for this. He very quickly was able to identify two of the three suspects, and he pointed police to a Facebook photo that of someone that he believed was the third suspect. Mm-hmm. And eventually police ended up charging, the prosecutor ended up charging all three of those individuals. But it turns out the third individual who was identified based on Facebook, it was a giant mistake.
So the individual in question, this is a 23-year-old Joseph McBride, and he was down in Arizona, so he got hauled back to Iowa?
So Joseph McBride was a Cedar Rapids native who went to high school there and graduated in 2013. In 2015, he moved down to Arizona, but he was sort of acquaintances with the suspects in the robbery from years earlier. So he was friends with them on Facebook. The Cedar Rapids police apparently were unable to find out that Joseph McBride had moved to the Phoenix area before they decided to seek his arrest in this case. And once they had an arrest warrant, they hadn't been able to talk with them, but they obtained an arrest warrant. And so the next thing you know, Joseph McBride tells me that one day he was out on his apartment balcony cleaning out his dog kennel and his boxers when federal marshals show up to arrest him.
And as it turns out, and so he's brought back to Iowa at that point by the federal marshals.
So he's jailed briefly in Phoenix waiting for transportation to Iowa, and then he takes a private prison van that takes about a week to make its way back to Iowa, stopping at overnight at jails in Nevada, Colorado, and Missouri.
Wow.
And he says that was probably the worst part of his whole ordeal. He says he was shackled and handcuffed in the back of that van. It was 95 degrees. There was no air conditioning. And the whole time he's insisting that he's innocent. And they say, well, there's nothing we can do. You have to wait until you get to Iowa to make your case.
Right. And as it turns out, he is innocent, and he had a good alibi.
Yeah, he had taken some Facebook photos of himself. This crime occurred on New Year's Day 2017. He had Facebook photos from late New Year's Eve showing he was in Phoenix, and he had alibi witnesses saying they were out with him that night and that they spent, part of the next day with him. And he provided that evidence as soon as he got to Iowa. But he still stayed in jail for a couple more weeks while they checked out his alibi. And he wasn't released, actually, until one of the other individuals charged in the crime had a cooperation agreement with the prosecutors and said, by the way, Joseph McBride had nothing to do with this. I don't know why he's been charged.
All right. And the officials in Linn County having a great sinking feeling at that time, at the very latest, paying out $285,000 this week to Joseph McBride. So put your finger on the crucial mistake made by, I guess this is the top prosecutor, County Attorney Jerry Vandersanden.
Well, you know, I think there was a number of opportunities along the way, starting with the police investigation, that could have identified that Joseph McBride was not the person here. But, yeah, in this case, I mean, they were able to track him down once they had an arrest warrant. It seems like they should have been able to track him down before they got to that point for an interview where he could have provided, some of this alibi evidence, and I think they would have been able to find out quickly that he had nothing to do with it.
Mm, interesting. This is not long after another settlement to the south of Linn County. Johnson County paid a sum to settle a lawsuit. Something rather similar?
That's a little bit different of a case where the individual in that case had allegedly been framed by some of his longtime enemies and set up for a crime that he didn't commit. So that was more of a case of the investigators sort of being fooled, you might say, allegedly being fooled by this scheme. But, yeah, it's a similar type of lawsuit against the prosecutor for, who was ultimately, responsible for an investigation that, allegedly got the wrong person.
Ryan, you spoke with Joseph McBride after the settlement. How did he feel about this $285,000 settlement?
Yeah, I think he's relieved that it's not going to be a long, drawn-out battle, and, of course, he's looking forward to getting some compensation. He says he's going to, possibly buy a new car and invest in his future. But he says he's still very much haunted by what happened to him. He says he's not satisfied. He does want changes so that this doesn't happen to anyone else. And he says that, it's hard for him to live in his apartment because every day he has to pass by where he was arrested, and it brings back some pretty dark thoughts. So one of the things he's planning to do soon is move out of that apartment.
In the Linn County case, any repercussions you're looking at here in this story?
Well, what is remarkable, and Joseph McBride's attorney certainly points this out, is, I mean, they did settle this very quickly, and the board chairman, framed it as righting a wrong, a mistake that occurred. And so that is remarkable. I mean, they could have fought this for years. It could have been a long, drawn-out process, but instead, at least he gets some compensation for what happened to him. It will be interesting. My guess is the county attorney's office will be maybe changing some of their procedures on how they review and sign these complaints, although the county attorney, from what I've seen, he hasn't really had much comment about this yet.
Okay, Ryan Foley, AP correspondent, with the story of Linn County paying $285,000 to a man wrongly jailed for 68 days. Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you.
It's a Friday News Buzz edition of our program. Quick conversations about the news that we didn't get to otherwise in our talk shows this week. Next, a story of alleged racial profiling this week. It happened on Tuesday at an Old Navy store in West Des Moines at the Jordan Creek Town Center. Reporting on it for the Des Moines Register, Aaron Young, he joins us now. Hi, Aaron.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. To tell us the story of what happened to this young man from Central Iowa, James Connolly III, what does he say happened to him on Tuesday?
Yeah, so he entered the store earlier this week, and he was shopping around for a couple of hoodies, and he's a frequent shopper at this Old Navy. He says he goes there at least weekly. He went up to the register with his items that he was planning to buy, and the employee at the front desk had asked, "Are you going to pay for that coat as well, the coat that you're wearing?" And James was kind of taken aback from that. He was laughing at it because he couldn't believe what he was being told, and he ended up was being told to take off his jacket, and the employees there were scanning the tags to mainly input to see whether or not the jacket was in fact bought or if it was recorded stolen. They were just trying to see if if James had actually purchased this. And this jacket was actually a gift he said that he received at Christmas. And the incident happened for about 20 minutes. And throughout this all, James had told us yesterday that, you know, it was a blessing from God that he ended up grabbing his cell phone and started to record what was happening right in front of his very eyes. And it's a very unique incident that happened, that took place.
Right. And he put pictures, some of the video footage on his Facebook page. And I think this is where you picked up on it, Aaron, and started investigating and reporting on it. Let's listen to a little of the audio from the video, this little portion, little snippet. James Connolly, the man who allegedly was racially profiled, he says this is him a few seconds after leaving the Old Navy, talking in the parking lot of Jordan Creek Town Center.
Literally just got stereotyped because of the color of my skin. They think I stole my jacket out of my life.
Okay, so what does Old Navy say? What's their side of this?
Yeah, Old Navy, they released an emailed statement on Wednesday saying that, you know, they're actively conducting an investigation into the situation. And then yesterday, late Thursday, Old Navy posted onto its Facebook page a similar statement saying that the company has reached out to James Connolly and have apologized for his shopping experience there, and that they are continually investigating into the incident swiftly. And, you know, they are reiterating what they stand for as a brand, because if you go to Old Navy, which is owned by Gap Incorporated, you go to Gap's website, and under their customer bill of rights, they have at least four or five paragraphs dedicated to racial profiling and how this store prohibits it, and, you know, more about their beliefs and what the company stands for. So, they are still conducting an investigation with the Jordan Creek Town Center Old Navy.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if you have any thoughts. You'll be following this story, I assume, on repercussions. It sounds like these employees did not act within the guidelines that the Old Navy had set down. But it's hard to know after the investigation. But, I mean, your thoughts.
Right, yeah. No, I haven't heard much more about the employees and kind of what's left in store for them. I actually went to the Old Navy yesterday. It reopened Thursday, and I spoke with a manager who was on duty right when I entered the front doors, and he declined to comment about, you know, the employees' future and more about the incident. He just had directed me to what Old Navy Corporate has said in its statement.
Well, a big enough incident that Old Navy at Jordan Creek Town Center was actually closed down for some time.
Right, yep. They had temporary store closed signs on Wednesday, and there were a couple of police cars that were circling around the parking lot throughout the day, Wednesday, and I believe even Thursday, and same thing with Jordan Creek Mall Public Safety. They were around the parking lot as well.
Wow. Okay. Aaron Young, thanks for following the story, reporting on it, and talking with us. Aaron Young of the Des Moines Register with a story of alleged racial profiling this week at the Old Navy store in West Des Moines. Thanks, Aaron.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And finally, on this News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News, tonight and tomorrow, the annual Winter Dance Party is taking place in Clear Lake at the Surf Ballroom. Surf Ballroom, of course, famous for being the last venue where Buddy Holly, the Big Bopper, and Richie Valens performed before they died in a plane crash. That was today, back in 1959, February 2nd. A commemoration of those artists is the point of the annual Winter Dance Party. It was started in 1979. However, this is the first year they will celebrate without Dean Snyder, whose family owns the ballroom. Dean died January 13th. Lori Leitz is with us, executive director of the ballroom. Hi, Lori.
Hi there. How are you today?
I'm fine. First of all, sorry for the loss of such a beloved figure in the community. Tell us about Dean Snyder. He really saved the Surf Ballroom, I understand, from the wrecking ball.
He really did. He and his family, back in 1994, the chains had been put on the doors, and that's only happened a couple of times in the surf ballroom's history. But in this particular case, the building had become run down just because there wasn't enough money that came through to operate the business and invest into the building. And the managers and owners, that they just kind of locked the doors and had to walk away from it. And instead of turning it into some condominiums, the Snyder family stepped forward, and they basically rescued it from the wreckage. And they own a construction company, so they did a lot of the renovation to the ballroom, and put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into it. And they've retained ownership since the 90s. They remain owners of the building today, and they've got three sons and their families that are also invested in the building, and they're a large part of who we are. Although a nonprofit operates the venue as a business, they still own the building, and we're certainly going to miss them, but it's a big part of their family, and they're a big part of the surf. So.
Mm-hmm. The tradition sounds like it will continue.
Absolutely, absolutely, and we hold a 99-year lease, and we're going to do them proud. We've done everything we can to keep investing into the building, too, and keep the memories alive and the music going for generations to come.
For those who haven't visited the Surf Ballroom in Clear Lake, I mean, of course, it has that historical connection. But as a structure, as a venue, what do you find most appealing about it?
You know, history is so cool, and there was a time when it wasn't. But it, just to walk back into this building is like taking a step back in time. It's all been restored to kind of how it was back in 1946 when it was excuse me, 1948 when it was rebuilt. And just the whole building, the atmosphere, like it, just a simpler time is something
right.
that we take great pride in.
As I mentioned, Dean Snyder died in January. What are you going to do to honor Dean this year?
Well, we have a finale that we hold each year honoring the three fallen stars, Buddy Ritchie and the Bopper. And we thought it very fitting to have a fourth star this year because he very much was a star in the surf's history, and that he rescued it from even existing. Very few times do we alter that finale, so mm-hmm. we'll have some words, and the family is planning to be here that night, do mm-hmm. some video and pictures, things like that. And, of course, his favorite candy, Bit of Honey, is ever present in the ballroom this weekend.
Bit of Honey. You don't,
Bit of
that's
Honey.
You don't see that around very much anymore. That's a nostalgic candy.
It is, and he was known very much as Grandpa Dean, or Papa Dean, as he liked to call himself. He carried around a pocket full of those wherever he went, and so we're making sure everybody has their fill of those this weekend, too.
Sounds like, had I known Dean Snyder, I would have liked him a lot. He was a colorful personality?
Absolutely. Always had a smile on his face, always willing to roll up his sleeves. He'd grab a hammer any day of the week and help fix something if he needed to. He's a very hands-on, involved person. I don't know anybody that didn't love him.
Mm. So tell us briefly about the winter dance party going on tonight and tomorrow at the Surf Ballroom.
Well, we've got a lot of great entertainers. We actually started on Wednesday, so we're 2 days in. It's hard to believe we're halfway over already, but today is kind of the traditional sock hop as far as the event goes. It goes way back to the 1980s. But we've got the Holy Rock-a-Rollas, which is a cover band out of Minneapolis, to do just some great danceable hits, keep people on their feet. We do dance contests and costume contests this evening. We have a red carpet for people to walk in on, and it broadcasts locally. Bobby Cochran Band, which is Eddie Cochran's nephew, will be here performing along with the Tailfins and Vito Pacone's The Elegance. So it's going to be a really fun, high-energy night. We will also be remembering this evening the Mad Hatter, who passed away this past fall, and he was the individual who started the event back in 1979. He was a radio personality in Mason City at KZEV and decided to start a tribute, and it's a part of our blood here too. So we will be honoring him tonight, and tomorrow night is a little more star-studded with Brenda Lee and Bobby Rydell, Albert Lee and Friends, Linda Gail Lewis, and Danny and Annie. So lots of great, great star-studded power and a lot of great rock and roll here.
That sounds indeed like a winter dance party to heat you up. Thank you so much, Lori Leeds, Executive Director for the Surf Ballroom, talking about the winter dance party in its 39th year, started in 1979 to commemorate the 20th anniversary of Buddy Holly, the Big Bopper, Richie Valens' last performance at the Surf Ballroom. The three, along with the pilot of the plane, Roger Peterson, died in that plane crash today, February 2nd, 1959. That crash about 5 miles north of Clear Lake. Lori Leitz, thanks so much, and I'm going to go out with a little bit of nostalgic music.
Come my way. Hey, hey, hey. Every day it's getting faster. Everyone said go ahead and ask her. Love like yours will surely come my way. Hey, hey, hey. Every day seems a little longer. Every way love's a little stronger. Come what may, do you ever long for true love from me? Every day it's getting closer, going faster than a roller coaster. Love like yours will surely come my way. Hey, hey, hey.
And that's it for today. River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Podcasting and on-demand audio of River to River available at iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music is written and performed by the River Monks. Of course, we always welcome your comments and questions about this program. Email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.